Okay, let's start the recording and get the jingle going.
Go local with us, go local with Adventure, your unofficial cast to all things local guys. Yeah!
Welcome to the Go Local Podcast YouTube channel. My name is Adrian, and I'm not quite your host for this episode, but I am wrapping it up and putting it together for your enjoyment. So if you're wondering what's going on with the Go Local podcast, well, I'll be doing a separate video about that because this episode is, unsurprisingly, quite long, so not quite the right time to go into those details. By the way, audio listeners, if you haven't clued up on it just yet, you are listening to an audio-only version of a video podcast, a vodcast or a vlog or whatever you call it. And normally we would play the jingle to open the podcast, and that's it done. But obviously, as this is a video version and I do not have any visual elements to use for the opening sequence, that was kind of me attempting very badly to do a lip sync. So apologies for that, but it's kind of fun. Anyway, just a reminder about the Go Local podcast. It is an unofficial podcast made by local guides, for local guides, and about the Local Guides program. If you want to know more about the program, do head on to maps.google.com/localguides. And today, I have an exciting episode for you. Recently, I was invited by Jan van Haver, a level 10 local guide from Belgium and fellow Connect moderator, to be a guest on his excellent Let's Guide podcast, which is also another unofficial Local Guides podcast. So you may recall that I interviewed Jan in episode 9 way back in November 2019, so just over a year ago. And the roles are reversed now. And Jan interviewed me at the beginning of October to talk about ratings and reviews. So Jan was really sporting to allow me to video this discussion. So this is episode 15 of the Go Local podcast, and that interview is what you'll be enjoying.
So here with us today is, as I said, Adrian Lunsong, a local guide from a lot of countries. He might tell some more about it himself in a while. Fellow Connect moderator, fellow podcaster, more about that in a couple of minutes or at the end of the interview, I guess. Adrian, thank you very much for wanting to help me out with all the details and everything there is to be known about ratings and reviews. As I said, it's not my specialty, so I'm glad to have you here to answer all those questions. So let's just dig into it. Ratings can be 1 to 5 stars. So what is your interpretation of what each star level stands for?
That's a good question to start this interview. I'm gonna give you quite a long answer to it, actually, because the way I do reviews and ratings is quite detailed. It's the easiest way to explain it. So whenever I do a review, I use a rating scheme, and I use the abbreviation FAACTS. And the simple way for me to remember it is
facts.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it pronounces facts, and it's basically stick to the facts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, exactly. When you're doing a rating and you're writing a review, mm-hmm. you always want to make sure that you are as factual as possible. So I use the facts as a way to help me remember the things I need to review as well. And the way I look at it is that there's so many different things you can talk about in a review. And I think the easiest thing for me to explain it is that I break it down to different categories. So that's where the facts come from. F stands for food and drinks. The first A stands for ambience. The second A for accessibility. And then you got C for costs and T for tips. And then the last S is for service. So that's kind of how I break it down in terms of how I do a review and rating. And I believe it captures everything that there is to say about a place. It may not always work, but it has always worked for me so far. That I've been using it for about the past year or so.
Can you use all of them all the time? It depends on the type of place, right?
Definitely, yeah. So if it's a food and drink place, then definitely you have your food and drinks category there. But if you're reviewing, let's say a bank, then obviously you don't consider the food and drinks.
No.
Unless they serve food and drinks, then we should be interesting. Yeah, but for each of this category, except for tips, tips is a special thing that I use to remind myself what to say. But for each of this category, I give a 1 to 5 star rating. And that basically, a 1 is usually like very poor, 3 is average, and then a 5 is exceptional. And obviously, I tailor it differently for different categories. So for accessibility, 1 is completely inaccessible by someone with mobility issues. 3 is where some areas are accessible, but not all of them. And then 5 is for basically all areas are accessible. And then for cost, again, I change it slightly, where 1 is expensive, 3 is affordable, and 5 is a bargain. And then basically to tie into your question,
Have you ever experienced that you wanted to give 3.5?
Not really. So for each of this category, I give a solid number. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I calculate the average score. And then the average score is what I use to then put into Google Maps. And then the average score, let's say if you end up with 3.5, then I need to either round down or run up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of use my subjective feel for it and just say it should be a 4 rather than a 3 or vice versa and stuff like that. So I kind of use these 5 categories to help me figure out what sort of overall rating I should give a venue and a place. It's very structured, I know, but it's actually really helpful because it makes me very consistent in the way I approach any place that I come across. Mm-hmm. And I think consistency is something good to have so that you take a lot of the subjective behavior out of it. It can be frustrating, I have to say, because sometimes, like for instance, if I go to a cafe and I really enjoy the food and drink there and I really want to give the cafe a 5-star, but then when I look at across all the various categories, I find, let's say, for instance, accessibility is quite low. I do have to follow my method and rank them lower because of that. So it's frustrating in that instance, but it's also quite it's liberating because I rely so much on the structure that I kind of take away the emotions out of it. And it makes it feel more logical when I approach it.
If they have a very low score just for one of them, it drags down the
score
immediately. Okay,
And one of the questions I get asked quite a bit is that, you know, it's a bit unfair to rate a place down because their accessibility might be quite a low score. But the way I see it is that that may sound true in a way, but accessibility is a very, very important factor to consider. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we embrace it and the more we put it into our consideration, it forces the business as well to look at it in a more serious way and say, okay, look, people are rating us down because we don't provide enough accessibility features. And that's where we need to, you know, pay more attention to it.
Yeah.
And it helps everybody in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where local guys really can be supportive also for the total community. And I think also your structured approach is also very good as just a guideline how to or on what you can include in a review. People often say, what do I have to write in a review? And remembering the facts, then I can write about this, I can write about that. So that's the structured approach definitely has a lot of advantage.
It's weird because I struggle a lot sometimes. Well before when I first started this, I struggle a lot to remember what I'm supposed to write about because, I mean, food and drinks is really easy, but things like accessibility, I tend to forget to include that. And because now I have the structure, I always include it. And also tips is something where I tend to forget. I include it to say, let's say, the recommendation for dishes that I think people should try. Mm. Or, for instance, if, you know, there's a particular spot in this restaurant that's really good for views. You know, so I kind of try to include some special information to there as well.
Yeah. What I sometimes hear is people saying, well, as a matter of principle, I never give 5 stars. What's your view on that?
Well, okay, that's quite an interesting way to look at it. But it's a bit weird because if you never give a 5-star rating, then you're effectively restricting yourself to rating a place from 1 to 4. And I find that a bit restrictive and also a bit of a cop-out in a sense of if a venue deserves a 5-star and you decide, no, I'm not going to give a 5-star out of principle, then it's unfair for the business. The way I approach it, again, is that, for instance, if you have a favorite cafe that you go to and that cafe is the best of everything that you've ever been to, but you still feel that's not a 5-star rating, the way I would approach it is that, well, use that favorite cafe as your reference point and say that is your 5-star rated cafe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And anything else that's equal to it or better will deserve a 5-star. Anything else that's below it shouldn't get a 5-star. So at least you're still rewarding those who's really put in the effort to give you that experience and give you mm-hmm. and you give them that 5-star return. And also another thing that I find is that if you use the method that I talk about, which is stick to the facts, and you find an overall average rating, a lot of times, majority of the places you go to do not get the 5-stars because not every place will tick all the boxes. So actually, if you're very reluctant to get 5-stars, use my method and you'll find that nobody actually ever gets the 5-stars.
That might be an additional tip there. That's
okay. Yep.
Personally, I also think if had it been a 10 scale from 1 to yep. 10, then it would be easy to say never a 10, and 9 is, but 1 to 5, it's already very restrictive. Yep. So I share your
The odd thing that I've noticed is that if you ever look at reviews of how other people sort of have rated a place, mm-hmm. a lot of them is either a 1 or a 5.
Yeah.
It's like if they like it, it's a 5. It's like an automatic 5. Yeah. Or if they hate it, it's an automatic 1. And they don't go in the middle, which is kind of weird. I was fine. Because it's like almost extreme. It's like if it's a bad experience, it's really bad. You give them a 1. It's, yeah. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. That's also what I noticed. A lot of the 1 or the 5-star reviews just ratings, no reviews. Just people
yes,
leaving
exactly,
1-star
yeah.
or 5. No, it's probably something in the experience. It's a shame that
it's
don't
leave a review. Yeah, it's almost like a like or a dislike button, isn't it? It's,
yeah.
it's the extreme end. It's like that's all they care about.
Yeah. So, in general, what would you describe as a good review for Google Maps?
Wow. Okay, I'll keep this simple. I'll do 6 points that I find that it makes a good review. So point number one, concise. It should be short and easily understandable. Point number two, make sure that your review is informative. So it contains accurate facts and information. Point number three, I think a good review should be contextual. And this is quite a weird idea to get your head around it because this is something that was mentioned in Connect Live 2019. And that's something that I'm trying to incorporate into the way I write reviews. And basically the reason behind it is that you want to keep your review short. But to be short, you need to only mention the things that's important. So that's where contextual information is really important. You want to think about who your target audience is in terms of who your review should be targeted for. And also it's like, what's the main objective of the place? And that helps you give you a better idea of how to write a contextual review. It needs to be objective, so no personal attacks. Take all your emotions out of it and try to minimize any bias. I know it's kind of hard because we're humans. Point number 5 is make it useful. And this is quite similar to informative. Basically, you want to write reviews that provides information that's really useful for other people to read and they can find out stuff that you wouldn't get from, let's say, the website or from like asking other people and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the last point is make it constructive. And basically, this means that if you're going to write a negative review, make sure that it's not like it's bad and then that's it. And you don't explain why is it bad because that doesn't help anybody. So be constructive in your negative reviews and also mention how to improve it if you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also often like to include something you can only figure out if you've been there. Like
yes.
The chairs are really comfy or the music they play is really my taste. Something like this. That's no way you can find out from the website.
Yes.
You mentioned negative reviews. Let's talk about positive and negative reviews.
Yep.
Should you write negative reviews? Some people say, no, I only post positive reviews.
My general answer is that yes, if you feel that a place is not providing you with a good experience, you shouldn't shy away from mentioning it. So yes, do write negative reviews if you feel that it's legitimate. But obviously the main, I think the concept behind it is that if it's going to be a negative review, make sure that's objective. Make sure that, you know, you're being fair to the business and you're not saying it's bad business because or bad experience because of something that's just really random or weird that's happened in your experience. So make sure that you provide constructive suggestions as well on how they can improve because that helps. You know, and it's a great way to provide feedback to the businesses because they want to know what they're doing wrong as well so that they can improve. So negative reviews are actually pretty useful. I think businesses would actually learn more from a negative review than from a positive review because, you know, positive review, they're already doing it right. So, you know, they don't need to change much, but negative review really helps in that case.
Yeah, it's an opportunity to them. They should see it. Can a local guide leaving a negative review face legal consequences?
That's quite funny because there was a news article recently about someone who wrote a negative review on a competing platform. So it wasn't on Google Maps and he apparently got into legal issues with it, with the business owner for it. So the answer is yes, I think you can face legal consequences. Obviously, it depends on the country that you're in. Some countries have laws that are very much protecting or against defamation. So if you're saying something bad about a venue or a place, make sure that you can back it up with actual evidence. With reviews, it's really challenging because a lot of it is like is what you say against what they say. There's no evidence to back anything up. So it does kind of go against you if you write a bad review and the company takes legal action against you. So you just have to be really careful. And again, the way I would approach it is that if you are objective in your review, if you're courteous, if you're constructive, there's chances are there's nobody going to pursue you with a legal lawsuit, you know, because when you read the reviews, it's a nice review saying that, yes, I had a bad experience, but this is how you should improve it. And I hope to come back and see some improvement in it. You know, so it's only fair.
That's what I think is in what you just said, the most important part that you describe your experience, that you make sure you're not saying this is a bad place, but that you say my experience there was not perfect. And because of this and this thing, so that you're not stating facts about negative stuff, because then in some countries, as you said, you could indeed face legal consequences.
Yes.
Suppose you visit a place where you already published a review a couple of years ago, and this has either dramatically changed the place itself, or your experience now is really different from what it was the first time you visited the place. What do you do then in those scenarios?
I would definitely update the review that I've already written for it, because the world is constantly changing, you know, like especially this year. This year is a big, huge change for everybody, you know, so, you know, with social distancing, with all that happening, with like hygiene levels and all that stuff, you know, it's actually really good to update your review to say, hey, you know what, this cafe that I used to go to, the operating hours has now changed, and they now have a new procedure to enter the venue where you have to get yourself temperature scan, wash your hands, etc., stuff like that. So it's really good to include all those changes into a new review. And there are, I guess, different ways to approach this. You can either rewrite your whole review if you wanted to, so start from scratch all over again. But the method that I normally use is that I keep my old review as well, and I actually add a date to it. So I'll say like this review was written 2 years ago, And then I write my new review above it, and I include the latest date. Oh, actually, you don't need to include the latest date because that will show in Google Maps.
Yes, sure. When it was last
exactly, changed. Yeah. And I think that's really useful because it provides a historical context of when you were last there and what it was like before the experience and what's changed. For me, anyway, I find it interesting to have the extra information because when I go back to it and read it again, I'm like, oh, okay. I've been here so many times and my experience keep changing. So it's nice to know that. I don't know whether the business would find it useful. I don't know, but to me, more information is always good. I don't know.
Have you ever come across the situation where you wanted to write a review for a place and then noticed, hey, I already wrote a review here years ago?
I've also experienced the reverse of it where I was pretty sure I wrote a review for this and it's like, it's not there anymore. I'm like, is this one of those glitch where my review disappears for some reason? But I don't know. Yeah. But a quick question to you, because you probably know this. You don't get any extra points, right, for updating your review?
I think only if your previous review was less than 200 characters and the update makes it more than 200, then you will get the 10 extra points, I guess. But
right, okay.
No, you're right. You're right. So that's less of an incentive for a lot of people to update review, people more focusing on the gamification and the points and stuff.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. There's no extra points for updating reviews. Perhaps, but then, idea exchange.
But then if you upload new photos, you're always going to get the points for it, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. For some new dishes photos is always possible. You could also come across a review on a place on Maps that is containing things or claims that you are definitely sure that are not correct. Uh-huh. Is there any way to report those reviews?
Yes, definitely. So if you come across any review that is incorrect or is giving misinformation or even for other various reasons that is not it breaks against the policies, you can flag it up. So if you look at a review, every review has the three-dot button thing, what we call it. Yeah. I think it's called the overflow menu. If you click on it, then you can say report the review. And once you press that, you can then choose between, I think, five different categories of what the review is, what's wrong with the review. So one of it's not relevant, there's conflict of interest, there's offensive or sexually explicit, and then there's a privacy concern and legal issue. So you can choose between those reasons to explain why you think that review should be removed.
Right. That's right, yeah. And I think if you choose the legal one, then you're routed to yet another form. And then I think this gets a higher priority and they will take fast action on that. By the way, the things we've discussed so far and we'll discuss later on, if there's a relevant link to the Google Help section or Connect articles or what's on, obviously I will link to those in the show notes. Have you done that yourself, reporting bad reviews?
I have, but not very often. Most of the times when I do report it, it's mainly because it's not relevant. So someone would just provide some really random review, and I go like, no, that's not relevant to this particular venue, or they've, I don't know. It's very rare to get conflict of interest because you kind of need to know the people who's involved in this whole process. And the rest, thankfully, I've never seen any sexually explicit reviews.
Yeah, I think the automatic AI stuff from Google is picking those up quite quickly and confidently. Yeah. Suppose you're a business owner, so then of course you're very happy with reviews. So why wouldn't you, as business owner, review your own place, obviously with a 5-star rating and review? What would speak against that?
But what if you give yourself a 1-star review? That would be interesting.
Yeah,
I don't think that happens.
Perhaps, but those businesses won't be around for a long time, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not very familiar with the Google My Business side of things, which I'm pretty sure lots of people in the local guides community are. But I'm pretty sure that you cannot, if you're a business owner, review your own place, because that would be a conflict of interest.
Yeah, that's one of the cases where you could use this conflict of interest if it's clearly from... but then surely if you can't review your own place, there's some competitors that you could give a one-star rating and review.
Yeah. Again, that will also be a conflict of interest. And unfortunately, it's one of those things where if you do have a bad experience at a competitor's place, as a consumer, I don't think you're allowed. I'm not sure. It's a gray area for me, but I don't think you're allowed, because that would still be a conflict of interest. You know, it's, again, it's really hard for yourself to back it up properly and say, look, I'm a consumer here, not as a business owner. Again, the way I would approach it is that have separate accounts. Is it the way, if you really want to do it, you know?
If you run a pizza place, you could say, I need to check out all my competitors and give an honest review while I'm there. But
yeah,
gray area, definitely.
Yeah, and chances are you're going to be biased. You're not going to be writing a very honest review. So yeah, I would say avoid it, completely avoid it. It's not the right thing to do.
If you invest a lot of time in writing reviews, as you explained at the start with your facts method, and so then it's quite a bit of work to create such a review. Then you say, okay, now I've created this text, but there's not only Google Maps. There's also other platforms where reviews are highly wanted. Should you just, or could you, and should you just take this review you've written for Maps and publish it also on those other platforms?
The way I look at it, again, your review and your photos, those are your experience and your personal information. It's entirely up to you what you want to do with it. If you want to submit it to Google Maps, that's great. Obviously, I encourage that. I'm biased towards that. But if you want to put it on competing platforms, you can do so as well. I'm pretty sure you can do so, because that's your own personal information. But my advice would be actually submit it to Google Maps, and then you share the link to that review to other platforms. That way, it feels more logical in my brain, because you're making sure that everybody is looking at one single point source of information, which is your reviews, rather than spreading it out. You know, like you have your reviews on Google Maps, you have another duplicate review on another platform, and then you got different view counts and all that stuff. So the only reason why I would say that you will want to publish separately or independently on another platform, if that platform has better metrics, you know, so it gives you better insights of how many people viewed your review and how many liked it and how many people interacted with it. If that's the case, then I guess you could repost it on a different platform. Yeah. I think that's the right answer.
I'm also not sure if it's a yes or a no there. I only noticed myself that some people, some local guides who write extensive reviews and have told me, I'm also publishing this on other platforms, have seen that their reviews on Maps were all of a sudden no longer visible to other local guides.
Wow, okay.
Labeled as private. And probably my guess, but this is pure speculation, because it's duplicate content on the internet, and we know that Google, the AI, is looking for duplicate content all the time.
Yeah, that's quite
just
interesting.
One of the things that could be playing there.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
I would imagine that, because I in previous Connect Live events, I've met food bloggers, like people who actually like do this professionally. So they have their own website and they also write for magazines and stuff like that. And I know it's a slightly different format. So like a magazine or their own food blog, they would obviously have a longer review, and that's not something that they would copy and paste into Google Maps, because Google Maps reviews should be short. But yeah, it's quite interesting that I can understand from Google's point of view that they see it as a duplicate content, but it's also from the same author though. So I don't know. So it's a weird one.
Yes. Yeah. But it's of course tough for them to judge because
on the
other platforms there's another name probably for that user. So is it really the same or
I guess the way to approach it, if you really must submit a review to two different platforms, just remember that Google Maps reviews, you want to keep it really short because people, when they use Google Maps, they want to look at it and they want to quickly decide and move on. It's a very active workflow. They look for something, they find the information, they do it. Whereas going to a website is more of a research kind of thing. So write the longer reviews on your own personal blogs or whatever it is, and then keep a shorter version of it for Google Maps. So that way there's no duplicate content, but actually you've done the work for both.
Yeah. Actually, while I'm thinking of it with your facts method and then writing a longer text with different parts in it, is there actually a possibility to include some layout stuff while writing reviews in your text? I mean, bold, or is that, or how do you organize the different sections of your review?
I used to. This was in the longer version when I used to write the longer version of reviews. I used to write 1 to 2 sentences for every category. So there's 5 categories. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a long review. But I would break it down to paragraphs. And the weird thing is that when you're submitting the review, you can break it down to paragraphs. But once you publish it or you submit it, if I remember correctly, Google Maps actually removes the line breaks.
Okay.
Although I've seen some reviews with line breaks intact. So it's a really weird thing. There's no formatting that you can use in a map review, unfortunately. So the only way to do it is just use line breaks, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm. Yeah. Computers, huh?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know whether is it like a desktop thing versus the mobile thing, because the two can be different quite sometimes.
Yeah. And then you give somebody some advice for mobile, and what you do is from Android, and then they say, no, I have an iPhone, and then it works differently.
Yeah.
Typical. Yeah. Okay, I hadn't expected otherwise, but this will definitely become my longest episode so far. That's the risk of finding Adrian.
Yes, unfortunately, I do talk a lot.
No problem. It's also one of the advantages of podcasts. It can take very short. It can take very long. There's no fixed format. No having to force. I will have to cut here and then remove two sentences there and whatever.
Well, I hope it's interesting enough that people would stay on to listen to the full interview.
Yeah. Yes, great. Adrian, thank you very, very, very much for at your place. It's right now 1 a.m., I think, or already 1, or almost 2 a.m.
It's almost 2 a.m.
Thank you very much for staying up. But I don't want to let you go without giving you the opportunity to talk about the Go Local podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to extend your episode slightly longer because I want to talk a little bit about best practices about when you're writing reviews. And this kind of is quite a general thing. So it contains, it talks about photos, reviews, and videos. So basically, if you're doing visiting a place and you're wanting to think about what photos you want to take of the place, against that, I would recommend keep the number count as small as possible. So I normally do up to about 10 photos. I know sometimes you can do more, depends on the venue again. But the way I look at it is that the important things that you want to include in your photos would be front of venue, so the building itself, the entrance. Mm-hmm. You want to take pictures of the accessibility points, the general view inside, the menu, and also food and drinks. Obviously, I always reference to cafes because it's my favorite spot. Minimize your duplicates. Okay, so you may take 20 photos of the same dish from different angles, but you choose just one of those photos to upload. Don't upload more. And the reason for that is that you will find that if you do too many duplicates, you run the risk of getting flagged by Google system, and you run the risk of getting suspended from the program. So you don't want that to happen. And also from a quality point of view, it's not great for a user to see 10 photos of the same thing, just slightly different angle. It's pointless. Okay, I also don't do selfies. That's my personal choice, I guess. I don't find them very useful. But if you're doing a group shot, I tend to advise that you do it in a candid manner. So not your friends all posing there, because I prefer to take a candid shot to make sure that that's it gives a general sense of the atmosphere in the venue rather than a pose picture. So as much as possible, try to keep it candid, try to keep it real. Don't make it fake and stuff like that. And don't edit your photos to make it look like super nice when it's not actually that nice. And when it comes to reviews, which is what we're talking about today, try to write your review as soon as possible so that it's fresh in your mind. Don't leave it like me for months and months before I actually write my reviews. But thankfully, I take lots of photos, so I can actually remember it from the photos. But
do
another
as
thing
I
that
say, don't do as I do.
Yes, exactly. Because I know it's like I've experienced it. It's bad. So don't do what I do. But I also try to avoid writing review at the venue itself. And I know it sounds a bit strange, but some local guides have mentioned before that they submit the review while they're still at the venue or the place. And then the right. business owner would come up and say hi to them. And I just find that very weird. It may be a nice thing if it's a nice experience, but I find it a little bit creepy, like they're a bit too attentive to their social media accounts. So I don't know, I find it a bit weird. I always like to be anonymous when I review a place, and I also try to make sure that I'm not getting any special treatment. So again, I've heard stories where local guides would kind of almost like introduce themselves that they're there to review the place, and you know, and then sometimes
upon
they get
entering the place. You mean
upon entering the place? Yeah. So when they approach a staff member, or if they are taking lots of photos, and the staff members are asking them, "So what are you doing? Why are you taking so many photos?" And they explain. Sometimes they get special treatment, and I don't like that personally. I think it really blurs the line between being unbiased and being neutral in your experience. So even if people ask me what I'm doing, I'm just saying like, oh, I'm just taking photos for my own personal consumption. I don't explain that I'm doing a review or anything like that because I don't want any special treatment. You know, so it's a kind of gray area, but you shouldn't be rewarded for the things you do because this is all a volunteer basis. And also businesses shouldn't feel pressured to give you incentives to write a positive review. They're there trying to make money. You know, legitimately, so they shouldn't be giving you discounts or freebies and stuff like that, you know. And lastly, for videos, don't forget to add your videos, because that's the one thing that I always almost forget to take. It's like I've done everything, the reviews, the notes, and the photos, then I forget to take the video, which is a pain, because I always remember it like the day after, and go like, I forgot the video again. And video, you only need one video, which is basically just go from one corner of the room to the other. You just pan it around and you give a general sense of the venue itself. So again, that's basically it. But that's the general best practice that I always use when I approach a place and I'm thinking about what I want to include in my reviews or uploads.
Okay, although that video approach might be tough if the place is quite crowded.
Yeah, again, it's privacy issues, is it? Yeah. Privacy is one of those things that's really weird for me as well, because in certain countries, they don't care. It's really weird. In some countries, it's such a big deal. So again, it's like if you're doing a panning of a place, I don't know, if you wait for the place to be quiet, it gives a really weird sense of the place is quiet and dead. So
there's nobody around. The food must be around.
Exactly, yeah. But you could do videos of your food and dishes. And again, some food and dishes, when they're presented in such a fantastic way, you know, like they're using sparklers or using dry ice, you know, a video of it actually makes it really nice rather than just a photo. So again, it depends on. Obviously, if you're going to capture the staff member in your video, make sure you ask for permission before you do your videos. And also make sure you're trying to capture, you don't capture their face and just focus on the food itself. Yeah. Because yeah, nobody wants to really be on a video in some random review somewhere or online somewhere. So yeah. And lastly, I guess I can talk about the Go Local podcast. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So the Go Local podcast is another unofficial podcast. It's on the Local Guides program. The focus is different from the Let's Guide podcast. So the way I see Let's Guide podcast is much more beneficial. It's much more technical in a sense that it has a lot more information, very much specifically about the whole program and your day-to-day workflow or activities with the Google Maps app and reviewing and all that stuff. Whereas the Go Local podcast is more of a casual, hipster-ish podcast, where the idea behind it is that the focus is on the local guides community itself. So I like to interview local guides and just find out a little bit more about them, find out their background, find out what motivates them to be active in the program, and you know, share that with the wider community. I think the thing that pushed me to do the Go Local podcast was that when I attended the Connect Life events, and you meet all these amazing people with amazing stories, and I wish I could capture that experience and that magic and then share it to the wider world and, you know, showcase to people that, you know, these amazing people here are doing amazing things with the Local Guides program and you need to hear about them. So that's kind of one of the reasons where this Go Local podcast came about. It started out as a team of us doing it, and we were active in the first half of 2019, which feels like aeons ago. But life caught up, and doing a podcast is so, so time consuming. I have no idea how you do it. Yeah, it's crazy because you do it very, very consistently, and it's such tough work. You think like 30 minutes of audio is easy? No, it's more than 30 minutes. It's a lot more involved. Yeah.
No, I also had to, at the start, I had one episode every 2 weeks, but now it's like one per month, and that's already, otherwise yeah. you're always in an episode, and that's...
Yeah, you never get a break from it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then when you're doing an interview with other people, sometimes more than two people, it gets really complicated because we tend to do this online, and everybody tends to be from some far-flung area of the world. So you have a lot of technical issues that you have to get over to try to get the podcast running properly. So it's been really challenging for us, but I hope to keep the Go Local podcast idea running. There was a spurt of activity at Connect Live 2019 where I managed to interview quite a few of the local guides there, and it's gone quiet again. But then it's kind of transitioning to a new, slightly different project that I'm working on, which is making Go Local podcasts a video-friendly podcast. So that's why, unsurprisingly, I am recording this interview as well, and it will eventually make its way onto the YouTube channel of the Go Local podcast. So thank you, Jan, for letting me record this. Obviously, I'll wait for your podcast to release first, and if I'm lucky enough to finish my video podcast in time, I'll wait a few days after that and then release it. But you know me, I'm always slow and behind on everything I do.
Yeah.
So that's the idea. If you want to subscribe to us, we can find us on the Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, the whole lot. We are all there. Just search for us on the YouTube channel as well and subscribe. And hopefully you enjoy the program set or the episodes that we're going to put on there. And already there. So thank you so much.
Adrian, thank you once again. As I said, for you, it's already quite late or early in the morning, whatever you want to call it. So thanks once again for taking your time, a lot of your time for the interview. And I'm quite sure we'll, and hopefully, yeah, we will meet in person quite soon, one of these years at one of the events at a meetup or a Connect Live.
Definitely.
Adrian, thank you very much and see you soon.
All right, thank you so much. Have a great time. See you then all. Bye. And that's it done. I hope you enjoyed that interview and / discussion. I also have a post about the rating and review methodology, which you can find in the episode description down below. If you like this video, do give it a thumbs up and it will certainly make my day if you would subscribe to the channel as well. So So hit the like button and the icon bell thing to get notification for when future episodes get released. And tell me, what do you think about the facts method to rate and review places? And what about my best practices for photos, videos, and reviews? Do you hate it? Do you like it? Do you agree with it? You know, what's your method for rating and reviewing places? I'm curious to know. So do let me know in the comment section below, or you can find me at the Local Guides Community Forum, and that's at localguidesconnect.com. That's it for episode 15. I'll love you and leave you. And until next time, stay safe, folks, and let's guide.
Go local with us. Go local with adventure. Go local with us. Go local with adventure. Your unofficial cast to all things local guides. Yeah!
Reading Dan Brown at the moment, are you?
It's a book that I've always been wanting to read, and I've been carrying it with me for the past year or so. Never started it.
Yeah, there was always one more post to write and one more comment to give.